A little disclaimer before we begin. This episode was recorded over a month ago. I completely forgot to edit it until right now. So forgive us if the news is a little out of date. I hope you enjoy it anyway. Oh, also, there are possible spoilers ahead for the upcoming season as to plot. So be careful. You have been warned.
Welcome to Sleepy Hollow.
To another episode of Welcome to Sleepy Hollow podcast, your podcast all about the Fox show Sleepy Hollow. If you want to get into contact with us, you can do so at our email, which is welcometosleepyhollow@gmail.com, our Twitter, which is WTSH podcast, or our Tumblr, which is welcometosleepyhollow.tumblr.com with the number 2, not the word. Abby, how are you this week?
I am. It is a good week. It is good. A good week. How about you?
I am good also. I am just chilling. No more school. Not until September. Having to make moving arrangements though, which is not fun.
I just moved. And that was not fun.
No.
And then I'm going to have to move back at the end of the summer. So
that's also not fun.
Yeah, no. Not at all. Not even kind of.
News. Do we have any news in the Sleepy Hollow? Well, we do have news in terms of Emmy ballots.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know, the Emmy ballots are, correct me if I'm wrong, they are given out to voters who then choose 6, I think. And then from those, are they given to like critics or like a panel or what?
Yeah, it's kind of like a mix. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to be very specific about the Emmys. I believe it's peers and critics.
Okay.
But definitely for sure critics. And there's like this committee of voters, and they view everything that's up for consideration, and then they put their vote down, and people ballot whoever gets the most votes from that committee.
Sweet. And the ballot, it came out today, yes?
Yes.
Okay. And I was just checking it because we were having some technical difficulties.
Yes.
And I was checking the list, and Nicole Beharie is on the list. Tom Meissen is on the list. As is John Cho. So.
I weep.
So, Nicole was lead actress in a drama series, Tom was lead actor in a drama series, and John Cho was supporting actor in a drama series.
Oh my god, that makes me so happy. Oh my, you guys, look, John Cho, you guys, look. John Cho was the guy that was like in 5 episodes. I just want to point out how excited I am that John Cho is being recognized. I'm just very excited right now because John Cho is very good at what he does.
He is very good. I even have in my little notes for our episode 1 recap, just one line, all to itself, John Cho!
Yes, and the infamous quote, because we weren't podcasting on the show when it first premiered, the quote heard around the fandom was, no, John Cho, no. That was it. It was the big quote, yes.
Yeah. And we have a release date as well. We have for season 2.
Yes.
I can't remember.
I believe it's September 19th.
Okay.
I might be totally lying about that. Let me double check that. But I think it's or 12. It's either the 12th or the 19th. It might be I think it's the 19th. Because I was like, wow, I feel like this should have premiered earlier if they're doing 18 episodes.
22nd.
Okay, I was totally off. Really, the okay, yeah, now I know why I felt that way, because I'm even now I'm shocked again.
So yeah, September the 22nd is our airing date for season 2.
That's later than it premiered the first time around.
Yes, it. I have the first series, and that was September 16th.
Yeah.
So, a little bit later, but...
All right, Fox.
So, is anything else happening?
Did we talk about the new guy?
No, we didn't. And the girl. There's another girl as well.
We got, there's a bunch of stuff. There's spoilers, too, so we should do that little spoiler alert thing, because... Okay. One, we have the bounty hunter guy, and I can't even remember his name, and it's probably because I'm not really excited for him. I don't mean to say anything about the actor. I'm just kind of like, I'm just really like, where is Luke? Like, that is, I just want to know where he is. He dead? He's probably dead. But we have a new bounty hunter guy, and he, according to some spoilers that have been released, he is a potential love interest for Abby. And he knows a little bit about, like, the demon monster hunting thing. And we'll get a little bit of his backstory. And he has a bit of an arc coming up. He's a recurring character. There was also, there's a girl. Okay, our sheriff was casted. So let's get names on all of this. We actually have somebody who is behind. And she was in House of Cards. And I loved her in that. Yeah, she's a really strong actress. And we also have some, like casting details. The role hasn't been cast yet. But Ichabod Crane's old girlfriend is coming back. And she's jealous. She was jealous and kind of finicky. And the casting call for her required that she be okay with being in water and wearing prosthetics.
Right.
Mermaid. Okay. Clearly. That was my first thought. But obviously not mermaid. But if mermaid, so awesome. Okay. One, now that's out of the way. I was also thinking maybe headless. Like headless and, oh my gosh. Jeremy?
Yes.
Maybe? Like, she's gonna be a horseman and she's gonna come out of the water. I mean, because they're...
Water demon thing.
Yeah. I mean, I thought a siren, but I was like, I don't even know if they're going to go down that route. But, like, yeah, I mean, they could... Because they're supposed to raise other horsemen. And the two horsemen that we have now are connected, oddly, to Ichabod. And they're all jealous and angry at him. So, I mean, it kind of fits the MO.
Fits the bill. Unless the other two are connected to Abby, as she is the other witness.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of hoping for, but I don't know. I don't know what they're gonna do. So either we have a headless horseman, we have a mermaid, or we have something else entirely.
Very interesting. I'll put a little spoiler alert over that bit in case anybody doesn't want to know what's happening, because I know people can get pretty cranky over spoilers.
Yes, here's another spoiler, so you're going to need to do another alert. Okay, so we found out a little bit about what's happening with Abby's storyline this upcoming season. We're going to get to see Mama Mills. We're going to get to meet her. She is going to be a part of it, and her reemergence is going to play a part in this new bond that Abby and Jenny are going to have, which I'm like, yes! Here for it. Awesome.
I'm not very interested.
Do you remember if, I know, I think one of Abby's parents died, I believe, if I recall correctly, and I can't remember if it was her father or her mother, so I'm not sure if we're getting her mom in a, like, a new capacity, like a present capacity, or if she's going to be in flashbacks, kind of like Abad's father was in Purgatory, but...
I can't remember if it was explicitly said that... parents were dead or not. I don't know.
Well, we must, they might not be. Yeah, it has been a while. So she might be flashback, she might be present, not sure. But here's the other spoiler that's attached to it that I kind of went womp womp about. So apparently there's going to be a guy that comes in and sort of creates a triangle between Abby and Jenny. Because, you know. Yeah. That was basically everyone's reaction. Everybody was like, nobody wants this. Nobody wants this. Nobody. I feel like, and I don't even know because, you know, we could be talking about platonic. We could, you know, we could be talking about competitive triangle, or we could be talking about a romantic triangle. Prayer circle that this is, no one wants a romantic love triangle. No one. Let me ask you this. Do you think they would ever make a romantic love triangle between Sam and Dean?
No.
Okay. Then why? No. Exactly. So there's my opinion on it. And I feel like most of the fandom is kind of like, let's not do that thing because we don't really need it. And I'm afraid it's going to be this new bounty hunter guy. And I'm kind of like, let's not ever do that, please.
I could probably cope with it if it was like he got in the way of their like sister bonding.
Oh my God, in, yes. Oh, yes. Exactly.
As in like just, I don't know, was an extra person that was taking Abby or Jenny's attention away from the bigger picture, but not like, oh, I love you. No, I love you. No.
Yeah, nobody wants that. Most of us don't even want the fandom love triangle that we have. Like, most people are like, can we just not do this? You know? Like, so I feel like I'm really hoping that we stay away from the love triangle aspect. But I just feel like that's not a good idea for anybody. So, okay, here we go. We have the names of the actors who have been cast. Sakina Jaffrey from House of Cards will play Lena Reyes, and she is the new sheriff. What? And I guess she's going to be a little rougher around the edges. And this Hellcats actor, Matt Barr, is going to be playing the bounty hunter. I guess his name is Holly? It's Hawley. So whatever, however you
Holly?
Howley. I don't, who knows. But he's a bounty hunter. And he'll probably take your shot. So, if you like that sort of thing.
Okay, so, what did you think of the opening sequence? That battle and violence and Ichabod erupting from underneath the ground. What do you think of that as an opening sequence for a pilot?
Well, I think the first thing we should definitely talk about was the song. The Rolling Stones. I think that set... I don't know, I remember watching this and just feeling like the opening sequence was a little bit disorienting, but also really engaging at the same time. I really, really liked this pilot on the whole. And I thought the setup was sort of nice because, you know, Ichabod is a man out of time, and so to kind of understand what he is feeling and going through and how weird this is, you know, to be that ultimate twist, we have to sort of start with him. And we do, and then he sort of does it weird. Did we ever figure out what the heck that foamy stuff was that he was busting out of? I'm not sure anybody knows what that was. I'm really sorry he had to bust through that, whatever it was. I'm sorry for him. But, I mean, I think it was a really cool, that moment was a really cool moment. And so that he, you know, comes up out of the ground, and he's really disoriented, kind of like we are. We're just like, kind of like, what is happening? What is going on? And he's in this, like, foggy place, and he gets onto the street, and then he almost gets hit by this car, and you're just like, what? And you're like, where's this dude gonna go? What is he gonna do? How is he feeling right now? I think that, to kind of play with this premise, I think that was a really strong way to start.
Yeah, definitely, I agree. And sort of the battle scene, and then into just him, like you said, coming out of this foamy crap in the ground, it was just sort of hit the ground running, which is how you need to start a series. You need to just bang, here we go, here's action, here's drama and confusion and disorientation, so that you're sucked in the first couple of minutes. And I think it did that really, really well. I think I saw behind the scenes of them filming that, and they only had like, they could only do one take, of him busting out.
Whoa.
Because of whatever it was, they didn't have either time or resources to film it a second time.
Right.
So, it's a good thing he got it right.
Yeah, super important. Good job, Tom Meissen. You didn't mess it up.
No. And yet the song, because the series finished with that song, didn't it?
The pilot started and finished with that song, and then the series finished with that song. The series finished with that song.
Okay, I thought so, because I remember thinking at the end of the season finale going, I've heard that song before. Where have I heard that song before?
I mean, it's Sympathy for the Devil by the Rolling Stones. It was a pretty big song. I'm sure there's a lot of kind of like supernatural genre shows that have used that song. Probably, I mean, like a lot of good dramas too. And I'm sure it played on the radio all the time. So it's a pretty popular, or was pretty popular song. So I'm not surprised that you knew it.
Okay, cool. So, another question or little pointer I had here is when we meet Headless for the first time in the 21st century, what do you think of the... I don't think we've ever talked about it, or I can't remember off the top of my head, but have we ever talked about the special effects of Headless? How do we feel about how they pulled that person off?
I think we did talk a little bit about it when we were talking about when we were podcasting on 107 Midnight Ride, because they brought a lot of Headless back in that same kind of mechanical, physical way in 107 that he was in the pilot. I mean, like, it's always weird to see a dude without a head. You know, it's always going to be like, that's not real. But I think that they, you know... I think part of the really engaging part of this was the fact that our understanding of who Ichabod Crane is and who the Headless Horseman is, none of that involved machine guns or, like, machetes. And so, you know, you're obviously like, this is really weird. And, like, the way he physically exists in space, the way he moves, it's very clunky, it's very awkward. But it's also, I mean... It felt like an action movie. While he felt very not real, he also felt very real at the same time. And I think the fact that this could have gone badly, I just want to point that out. Like, people could have been like, this is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen, and I'm never watching that again. And instead, I think because of how they kind of pulled it in with the mythos, and we'll probably talk about the mythology set up in the pilot, but how they, you know, set this up, it really made this fun. Like, this show was like, don't take yourself or us too seriously. Like, let's remember that we're doing this for entertainment. Like, this is fun. It's a thrill ride. And this was like one of the first, you know, like little red flags that somebody was going, we're having fun here and you should be too. And so I really liked Headless and just the ridiculousness of him walking around, riding a really intelligent horse. I mean, this horse is super smart. You know, like, taking off road signs at the head. That was great. I enjoyed that little piece. And just, I mean, generally taking down entire small town police departments with guns where we don't know where he got them from. But okay.
That's one of my points, though. Where did he get the guns? As is the not taking themselves too seriously, and I used the same, the whenever he chops off the sign and he's actually decapitated the person on a horse. Yeah. It was like, we're not going to take ourselves too seriously, neither should you. And that helps, because it means you can buy into it, you can suspend your sense of reality quite nicely.
Right.
Because it's not, they're not trying to be something they're not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. So... then I have a question. When Ichabod is arrested, why? Because it skips then to the scene of him in jail being questioned about Corbin's murder. But John Cho's character, as far as I know, Abby hadn't described the Headless Horseman over the radio. So how did he know to arrest this random man wandering through the streets?
Because
was
I,
it for jaywalking?
Oh my god. no, I think it's that John Cho was working with Ed Lis and working with Malick, and he knew what to expect. You know, they knew that when they brought Ed Lis back, they were bringing back Ichabod Crane, and so they were prepared. I don't think they were prepared at the time to deal with Ichabod rising and suddenly appearing, but I mean, you could see in the way John Cho's character, excuse me, was reacting to the call, the police call over the radio. He was like, crap, this thing is out, and I have to find him before anybody else does. It wasn't necessarily that he knew, you know, what Ichabod looked like. He knew that this was going to be a guy from the Revolutionary War period, and he was going to look, I mean, like, he was going to look totally out of place. And so if he could find that guy, he would, he could kind of turn the situation and manipulate it into, you know, capturing Ichabod so that, you know, either Ed Lis or Malick could get a hold of him before he got out and found the second witness. I think that's how he ended up getting trapped. It wasn't even necessarily that John Cho knew, John Cho, oh my God. Andy, see, this is the problem. You can't separate John Cho from Andy Brooks. Andy knew what he was, I mean, looking for, but I mean, you see a man, a scraggly looking man in a, you know, Revolutionary War clothing stumbling around the middle of your street. That's gonna, you're gonna notice that, especially in a small town. So I think that's what, how that panned out. I think that's how it worked.
I had not considered that, but I think you've nailed that one on the head. Okay. Something about them in the jail, whenever Abby starts to talk to him, they immediately go to a place that I didn't think they were going to go.
Mm.
Ichabod immediately addresses Abby's race and was like, huh, so you've been freed from, or you've been emancipated. And I, it would have been weird if they hadn't addressed it, but I wasn't expecting it. I remember from my original watching of the pilot, I wasn't expecting them to do it straight away.
I thought it was great. I mean,
it was refreshing.
Yeah,
I thought.
I spoke to a writer at NPR. He's their TV critic, Eric Daggins, about Sleepy Hollow and sort of its success and Fox's new model of incorporating diversity. And he had a lot to say about this. But one of the things that I really enjoyed to talk about was, you know, how diversity can actually make your stories more interesting. Slavery is a really uncomfortable topic in America. It is something that people try to minimize. They try to deny. It's something that a lot of people aren't very educated on. We don't spend a lot of time talking about how it actually worked. You know, how we, you know, went from slavery to emancipation to sharecropping. You know, and so it's going to be a topic that some people immediately, I mean, they might be thinking about, like, oh man, she's a black cop and he's from this time period. And like, if they have this conversation, what is that going to be like? But, you know, Eric kind of applauded this approach that, you know, incorporating this actually makes your story a little richer and makes it a little more fun. What would you rather see? You know, a white lady cop and Ichabod, you know, sort of talking out, you know, how to do this stuff, or this is our history, is our understanding of history, because obviously they're playing with myth, the really grand world that they set up in this pilot, and they did it rather well. Or would you rather have these moments of semi-hilarity, semi-enlightenment, that this show, I think, touched on throughout? This show has done a lot of things that other shows haven't done. It was brave enough to try to have discussions that other shows weren't. And not that it was always successful, but, you know, I think it makes it more interesting. I think Abby's personality and the fact that, you know, you have to deal with this conversation, this joke is the first thing that comes out. It's sort of refreshing. It really grounds us, reminds us that Ichabod and Abby are two very different people. The world that he grew up in, the world that he lived in, is very different from the world that she lives in. And this is part of them coming together. This is the start of how do we put these people together? How do we create this camaraderie, this witness team? when their worlds and potentially their world views are so different. And so it works not just as this kind of funny thing and sort of this enlightening thing, but it also works as this really sort of intelligent way of creating more solid characters and giving our characters a little more meat to work with in terms of not just building themselves, but building their partnership. So, I mean, I love that joke. I think that it might have made some people uncomfortable. I know a lot of people laughed at it. I thought it was rather genius, and I'm glad that they did it as soon as they did, because I would have been sitting there, like, I mean, as a black viewer going, okay, are we going to talk about this giant elephant in the room? Are we just going to be like every other show that kind of ignores this? You know, I think there's a difference between, you know, colorblind casting and being very purposeful with your casting. I don't think purposely casting race is a bad thing. I think that you need both. And I think the choice, I know that, I believe they, when they talked about this, Abby wasn't, when they wrote her, I think she wasn't inherently black. I think Nicole got the role. I can't remember what it was, but I don't think that Abby was written to be black, but Nicole won the role. And so they then had this opportunity to play with something rather brilliant and be a little daring and push the envelope a little bit. And I think it has worked tremendously in the show's favor. And it all started with that one joke. And the one look that she gave him, that I know everyone was like, for real? Like, we all shared. In that moment, we were all Abby Mills.
Yeah. And I think even more superficially, for like the premise of Man Out of Time and This Is Not the World, you know, I think, you know, it would have been a shock for him to see maybe a white female lieutenant, but it was an even bigger shock.
Yeah.
Sort of an even bigger reminder of this is not the world you came from.
Right.
That she was black.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think that was also, in its own weird way, this subtle reminder of, for us, that what we are about to embark on with the witnesses is not something that we can understand. This is not the world that we knew. This is not what we think this show is going to be. This show is absolutely out of control with its mythology, and it's so much fun. And that was sort of a reminder for us, like, hey, what you think is what you know is not what you know and what you're used to. So get used to that.
Definitely. The next point I have is just two words: Ichabod Sass.
Mm. Oh my god. There's something about, particularly in the earlier half of the season, the way that Tom executes Ichabod's demeanor, his response to the world around him, that is, it's not just punchy. There's this balance that is between him and Nicole and their characters. But, you know, I think it's kind of nice to see a man who would be so totally and utterly confused have a little snark in him. I think that really gave him character, you know, that really fleshed as a person, because he wasn't just this dude wandering around. He was this really smart guy who was just in an environment that was weird to him, you know. And that's kind of what his quote-unquote sass is about. It's not, you know, I'm not an idiot, you know, I know what that is, but obviously also I don't know what that is. Could you be polite and tell me? You know, and I love that aspect of him.
And it's something that I've sort of come to miss in the later half of the season, because as he gets more comfortable with his environment, is his humor isn't quite so sharp and daggery.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
I think...
And also...
Oh, go ahead.
I just have... underneath about the Starbucks, about the that oh one my... is also a Starbucks.
Yes. Oh, oh man, that was, I mean, that was really great. As somebody who has visited DC quite a bit, and I believe that they're close today. Like, there is literally a Starbucks on every block in DC, and like for Ichabod, who really like kind of grew up in a area where, I mean, like, there was such, I don't even, did they even, like, they probably sold coffee at, like, taverns or whatever. I'm probably being super ignorant right now. Excuse me. But, I mean, corporations were not a thing in Ichabod's time. Like,
no.
Mass producing things on that kind of level, even putting guns together, piecework, that was totally man-run. And you had a bunch of people doing this stuff. There were not machines doing all this stuff. So, and like, I feel like we're also at a time in our economy. And we're all, we also, our culture also has like a certain attitude about some of this stuff that, like, in that moment, we were Ichabod. We were like, oh, wow, we have a Starbucks in every corner. For real? Why is that? Why is that even a thing? Why do we do that? You know, like, so yeah, it was, that was a good joke. There were so many good jokes in this pilot.
Yeah, this pilot was joke heavy, but you know, it not too much. Like, it struck a really good balance, and that's what I love about the show. It provides sort of really nice viewpoint on where we are as a society today. Like, I can't wait for him to maybe talk about, I don't know, social media or something like that in the next series. Just like, so you don't talk face to face. You conduct conversations through the ninanet.
I, you know what? I actually can't wait to get to the point. There's, we talked about this the last podcast. One of my favorite shows. There's a vampire in this show who's like 200 years old, and he's like gone through time. Like, he's lived through all this time. And there's like, he's reading the newspaper one day in the kitchen, and he goes, "The Vatican tweets," and then he laughs to himself. I mean, rather, I mean, there's venom in this laugh that I hate this century. Like, you know, like the idea that once he finally figures out all of this stuff, he's gonna be that dude. He's gonna be that dude, like, yeah, you all are ridiculous and this is silly, but also, can I follow the Vatican? You know, and it's like
I can't believe this is a thing. This is so silly. But I wanted to do the thing.
Yeah, you know? And I think he's a little bit there. But I can't wait till he gets past the part of, like, I'm going to sticky note all of this stuff for you. And he gets to the point where he can, like, reflect on it all and just kind of laugh to himself about it. I can't wait till he gets to that point.
Definitely. I also have just sort of a character development on Abby's point of view. Is she gives him a bit of... She gives Ichabod a bit of stick about being, you know... Oh, you're from the past, whatever. But she doesn't overdo it, I think. And the first instance we see this is whenever she's teaching him how to use the torch, she actually does it in a very sort of calm and collected, and I'm going to explain this to you and just pretend like this isn't a totally unreal situation. And she, you know, she's really kind of calm about it, whereas she'd previously said some quite stinging things about, yeah, uh-huh. You're from 1700s. Yeah, I believe it.
Right, right. I think
that says a lot about her character.
Yeah, and it's a really good jump point for her and her skepticism and her acceptance of her role and who she is. Because when she starts this, she literally wants nothing to do with it. You know, all of this just reminds her of a past that was very painful for her. And this random guy... who says he's from the past, and, like, he's bringing up all this weird crap, you know, and I feel like we will all be like Abby. We wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to... You'd be like, who are you? What? Put you in a straitjacket. You know? Like, I don't want to associate with this guy, because this guy is not sane. And so she has to sort of balance her own feelings, and also balance his genuineness. And knowing herself what it's like to be ignored, for no one to believe you, and you, she evolves rather well and a lot in the pilot. And that's, you know, we see her. That's where that comes from, that stiffness to that, that not overdone skepticism. It's healthy. And she doesn't get too, I mean, she doesn't get too bitey. You're right. She stays pretty calm about it. And I think, you know, you see her kind of working with that. Like, I can't get worked up over this because this isn't something that I can change. So I just want to get through this assignment and get through my day and move on. And that's what she thinks she's going to do, except then she accepts her witness role to save the world.
Talking about the witness, I was thinking about this whenever she visits Corbin's office and starts rifling through, and on the tape she hears Corbin saying something about a farmer that had seen the same thing, the four white trees and the demon.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's ever going to be addressed why, for one, he wasn't a witness, and for two, why Jenny isn't a witness.
I think they said that they were going to address why Jenny wasn't a witness. You know, that's going to be important.
Yeah.
Like, you can't ignore that, son. Like, yeah. we need to have a conversation about that. But, you know, that's interesting that the farmer, you know, I don't know. I mean, I honestly do not know. I think that this is one of the things that the first season didn't really address in terms of setting up this grand mythos and answering these really important questions. I hope it's explained. I really can't even come up with an idea other than, you know, you have like the apostles. And there are people who are chosen, and they don't know whether or not they're chosen. And, you know, there could be different people for different times. Obviously, this is not the first time that they have tried to raise all four horsemen. It has happened before. So, you know, maybe it's all part of, like, some godly cosmic plan, that there are people there to bear witness to the act. I mean, I know that has some like biblical, connection because there were people who were chosen just to witness these events, to not be key players, but to witness. That's my only guess. I don't know though. That's a really good question.
Well, maybe, whenever, or if we get, an answer for why Jenny's not a witness, it'll be satisfactory for why no one else ever has been a witness apart from Ichabod and Abby.
Yeah. Yes.
Something else that I have noted down here is, in the pilot, at least anyway, I, for a start, did not suspect John Cho. I was one of the people who was like, no, John Cho, no!
That's why they hired him. That's why. Because none of us would have believed it. None of us.
I was more inclined to believe that Captain Irving had something to do with it.
Yeah!
Because whenever he catches her in August's room, there's like a long sort of shot of his face just being like all sneaky.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, what if he knows? What if Orlando Jones knows?
Yeah. I think a lot of us had that assumption. I'd be eager to know why they chose to not go down that route. Because I think it would have been really interesting. Where Frank started and where he ended, I would not have guessed. I wouldn't have guessed from how they kicked him off. He did have the sort of air of knowing, of being that omnipresent character. I actually think it would have been cooler. I mean, I'm just going to say that. I think it would have been kind of cooler. I think I still would have liked that a bit more. But he definitely, he had those sly vibes. He had those sly vibes all through the pilot.
He did.
Which made him very interesting and mysterious and intriguing.
I definitely agree. Well, that's all my little points, more or less, but you mentioned talking about the mythology that we're introduced to in the pilot. What do you mean by that?
Like, I mean, I'm talking specifically about how they literally set up this world. How they set up this... how they set up this myth that there are these four horsemen, and how they tie it into this, you know, into this giant biblical plan. And I think that was one of the things that really won me over after I finished the pilot. It wasn't, I mean, obviously I came for the diversity. I want to say that. One of the reasons why I gave the show a shot was because of who they cast in it. But another, one of the reasons I stayed was because after the pilot, I just thought they're really concentrated on building this intense, detailed world. And I am a big genre fan. And getting to see this kind of stuff is always fun for me. And as a genre fan, I know that this is sort of reality-based, but it's also not really reality-based. Like, you have to let go a little bit sometimes. And then there's some stuff that you're like, yeah, I want this to be historically accurate. Or I want this to be grounded or feel real. And I felt, first, I felt like there was a good balance. And then I also just felt really good about the world that they were creating. You know, I think having rules and having continuity and creating a solid universe is one of the hardest things to do with a show like this. And the first season may not have overall been as solid for me as the pilot set things up, but I mean, that connection between the founding fathers, who Ichabod was, bringing in Katrina as a witch, and sort of this idea that there were all these people that were a part of this, that this giant event, world-changing event, because our independence sort of ignited independence movements all across the world. So this idea that this one event that is a very tangible thing for at least Americans, I feel like everybody, but is suddenly this idea that underneath, if you peel back this thing that happened, there's this sort of like entire other world happening underneath. It felt like National Treasure, except 10 times better.
With no Nicolas Cage. Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was good. I was like, they know what they're doing. They're excited about doing this. And if you build this strong mythos, you're going to have a solid show. So yeah, I thought that how they really hooked us with it was great. I thought the pilot was, I mean, really, really excellent. Very strong overall.
And I like what you said about the world building and stuff and giving us little surprises, like Katrina mentioning that part of her coven were still hidden, and he was a priest or a father or vicar or whatever, and that's like the last person you would expect to be involved in witchcraft.
Right, exactly.
So just throwing all these, ha, you didn't see that coming.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, quite honestly, like I talk to a lot of people, and I'm a continuity queen, like, it's really important to me, especially when you're building a world like this. And I'm a friend with a lot of people who it like is a nagging thing for. And I feel like the pilot did such a good job of setting this world up that a lot of the frustrations that happened later in the season were a direct result of this pilot being so good, and so engaging and so enticing. And so, like, obviously that sucks for, like, some later parts of the season, some of the stuff that's interspersed there. But at the same time, you know, I just want to applaud them on having a really, like, excellent. Because pilots are hard. People don't understand, pilots are really tricky. Not only do you have to, you know, set up characters, set up your world, but you also have to, I mean, it's literally like your marketing campaign. It's like a little movie. And you have to hook me. Because if you don't hook me, I'm not coming back next week. And that's the difference kind of between cinema and TV, is that you have to be, your pilot has to be good enough that I want to tune in every week, because that's how you make your money, right? That's how you keep going, versus a film, which is like, we have one shot to do this, you know, and everything's riding on it. And after that, you know, we make whatever money we need off of it, and then we move on to other projects. But the pilot is so key for our shows, and the writing was really solid, the acting, the chemistry between the leads, the cast. I just want to talk about this cast. I was like, holy crap, you know? Corbin, So we have, you know, we have Corbin and we have Andy, we have, and these are played by Clancy Brown and John Cho, who are really, like, sort of big names. And I feel like a lot of people, because most of us didn't, like, know Nicole and Tom, and, like, they were a huge part of people being like, oh my God, like, I know these people, I'm going to watch, I know these actors are strong. And like I said, the chemistry that happened between Tom and Nicole was a big selling point. You know, the effects. I remember one of the moments that stuck with me the most was when they walk into the jail cell, Andy's been killed, and you hear the voiceover of Clancy Brown, and you see this thing walking in the mirror. And, like, suddenly, like, what we thought was funny, ha-ha, and was just a cute shootout, isn't a game anymore. You know, it adds another element to the story, that this isn't just, you know, fantasy. It's not just historical fiction. It's not just action. It's not just drama. There's horror here, too. I don't know. I really love the world they built and how they built it. And, like, I would give them... I'd, like, give them, like, 5,000 pats on the back if that actually meant anything. It doesn't.
And the way the cast, like, the connections, like, we get a grand total of about 10 minutes, maybe not even, on screen of Abby and Corbin together. Yet, whenever they go through what they've been through together later on in the series, about how he sort of, like, adopted her and changed her because she was... you know, getting into trouble with the law and stuff. And it's totally believable in those very short few scenes we get with them at the start.
Yeah, I feel like that's actually one of my biggest regrets for the rest of the series is that we didn't. Because we'll talk about a little bit about this when we do our episode 2 podcast, because we see the sort of ramifications of his death and the effect that it has on Abby. And it's, I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, the relationship that they've built there, I don't think we always see that on TV. And I really like that sort of relationship. And yeah, the chemistry was there too. It was rather great and touching. Yeah, oh my gosh, this pilot's so good.
It is. So do you have anything else you want to mention about the pilot?
Let's see. I am interested, I suppose, in seeing how the pilot compares to the season 2 premiere.
Yes.
In the sense that, obviously, the pilot was the hook, line, and sinker. But it had a really good pace. It had a really good rhythm. I wonder if they're going to try to mimic that model. Or if we're going to start the way we ended. I'm not sure. I think I want us to start the way season 1 started. Only because I've realized after all of the shows that I watch and review that there's a threshold for pacing and excitement. And there's only so far you can push before things start to feel contrived. Things start to feel rushed, and the writing actually starts to reflect the high energy, the high octane, as some people put it, of your writing. Sometimes writing suffers from that as a result of that. And so I think, you know, I'm not entirely sure that the show did a good job of using the 13 episode format for its first season. I'm not entirely sure that they nailed how to use that. But we have 18 episodes now, and this is something that a lot of these writers are more used to. And so I think that if they go with a similar approach, excuse me, to how they started and how they ended in season 1, I think season 2 might be a little more solid because they have a little more time to expound on the mythology and answer questions, even show things as little as, you know, what Abby and Ginny are like at home. You know, I think those moments, those small moments, were missing. This show has a very cinematic experience, but it's not cinema. And I think this show needs to understand that and kind of work more towards being a TV show, you know?
Yeah. And I think if they're going to go for a similar format of, you know, because the pilot was so, so good, it led to later on there being disappointments when some of the things they set up didn't quite hit their mark.
Right, exactly.
So if they're going to do the same sort of thing for season two, then follow through.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And like continuity, your viewers know, we all pay attention. We're all paying attention. We know these things, we know them. So value the universe that you built and pay special attention to building it. Treat it with care. It is as important as your characters. So I feel like, yeah, if they do that the way they did in the pilot, I think season two might be off to a good start.
Definitely. Is that everything?
That is.
Okay. That was fun. I enjoyed that. It's nice to sort of go back and look over things now that we sort of have come out the other side.
Yeah, yeah. It is nice.
Okay, so that is this episode, our episode one recap. If you have any thoughts that you'd like to add or have anything that you'd like us to talk about for episode two and episode three, which we will be doing sometime soon, because we did say we'd be back, you know, sooner than 3 months, and we made it.
Yay!
We did it. We promised, and we actually lived up to our promise this time.
Yes, we did.
So, if you want to weigh in on anything, always contact us at welcometosleepyhollow@gmail.com, on Twitter at WTSHpodcast, or on Tumblr at welcometosleepyhollow.tumblr.com, with the number two, not the word. And we will see you again for episode two. Bye.
Bye. And so, like, I'm crossing my fingers that nothing insane happens on the call, because it took me an insanely large amount of time to even get on to accept your call.
Well, you're on now.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Oh God, I feel so terrible.
No, it's okay.
I know it's late for you.
I'm nocturnal anyway.